ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय तस्माद् भाद्रे स्वथनयान् माया व्यापादितान् अपि मानुषो च यथा सर्वा स्वकृतं विन्दते वशा. My dear sister Devaki, all good fortune unto you. Everyone suffers and enjoys the results of his own work under the control of providence. Therefore, although your sons have unfortunately been killed by me, please do not lament for them. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As stated in Brahma Samhita 554, Yas Twindra Gopa Matavendra Mahoswa Karma Bandana Rupa Palabhajana Matanoti Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Cha Bhakti Bhajam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Everyone, beginning from the small insect known as Indragopa up to Indra, the king of the heavenly planets, is obliged to undergo the results of his fruitive activities. We may superficially see that one is suffering or enjoying because of some external causes, but the real cause is one's own fruitive activities. Even when someone kills someone else, it is to be understood that the person who was killed met the fruitive results of his own work, and that the man who killed him acted as the agent of material nature. Thus Kamsa begged Devaki's pardon by analyzing the matter deeply. He was not the cause of the death of Devaki's son. Rather, this was their own destiny. Under the circumstances, Devaki should excuse Kamsa and forget his past deeds without lamentation. Kamsa admitted his own fault, but whatever he had done was under the control of providence. Kamsa might have been the immediate cause for the death of Devaki's son, but the remote cause was their past deeds. This was an actual fact. With much gratitude, we welcome His Holiness Jayadvaita Swami Maharaj to Radhagopa. Much louder, please. Hare Krishna. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 4, entitled The Atrocities of King Kamsa, Text 21. This verse, like so many in the Srimad Bhagavatam, has many layers of perceptions to learn from. Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. When Krishna left this world, he descended in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam to give light in the darkness of this age of Kali. And as in Krishna's Leela, he could perform so many purposes through any particular action or word. Similarly, the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam can enlighten and illuminate our hearts on so many different levels of truth if we are receptive to hear. Parikshit Maharaj, he was the example of how to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Not for the purpose of getting some pious credits, not for the purpose of socially being seen as attending the class. He was coming to Shukadev Goswami with a sense of the deepest urgency. He was starving for this knowledge. We cannot digest food without hunger. And similarly, according to how we are very eager, according to how we see that this knowledge is essential to our life, we cannot really digest it and understand it. Parikshit Maharaj was cursed to die in 7 days. He was holding on to every single syllable of every word with the desire to learn, with the desire to connect to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada told us he knew for sure he had 7 days. But there is not a person in this world who knows that they have 7 minutes to live. That is the consciousness that is suitable to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because real understanding is not simply intellectual. Jnana vijnana triptatma. The real joy of hearing is when there is realization. Realization does not come by our intellectual capacity or by our pious activities, even by our austerities. Realization only comes by the grace of Krishna. Shushushro Shridhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Syan Mahat Sevaya Vipra Pundyatirithada Sevanat. In the Srimad Bhagavatam text itself, it tells us to actually get a real taste for hearing, one must have this attitude of sincerely serving great souls. Sarinvatam sukata krishna punja sravana kirtana. When Krishna sees that we actually have adopted this type of eagerness to hear, then by his grace, he reveals the truths of the Srimad Bhagavatam and cleanses our hearts and actually gives us realization. Realization is a gift of Krishna, attained through our sincerity. Srila Prabhupada writes, that pure devotional service is very rare. Why? Because pure devotional service is so powerful that Krishna becomes subordinate to that pure devotion of his devotee. So he does not give it easy. But then Srila Prabhupada explains, for one who is sincere, serious, and is without ulterior motives, Krishna easily gives pure devotional service. This is important. Pure devotional service cannot be gotten. It can only be given by Krishna. Sam siddhir haritoshanam, when Krishna is pleased with us. Srila Prabhupada in his purports has taken the essence of the realizations of all the great acharyas in history, of the various Vaishnav sampradayas, along with his own ecstatic love, and has given us the Bhaktivedanta purports accordingly. In this verse, we find an extraordinary setting. Kamsa has imprisoned his own sister and brother-in-law, putting him in shackles out of fear of his own life, because he heard the voice that the eighth son would kill him. So much attached to his own enjoyment, proprietorship and control in this world, he was under the illusion that he could control a destiny that was beyond himself. He mercilessly murdered 6 infant babies brutally, directly in front of the eyes of Devaki and Vasudev. We know when a loving and caring mother and father carry a child, the mother carries the child in the womb for so many months. They're so eager. It's perhaps the ultimate happiness on a material level for family life, when that baby is actually born. The mother is thrilled to see this infant child. And naturally, emotionally, biologically, there's just intense affection for that child. The first glance at the child that has been given to you. Can you imagine 6 consecutive times at the moment of birth, your own brother coming and viciously smashing that child against a rock in front of your own eyes? Kamsa was not thinking about Devaki's feelings, the baby's feelings. He was not even thinking of his own karma. He was only thinking about his own egoistic desire to control and enjoy this world. Absolutely blind. This is the nature of material desires. It can infatuate us and blind us so we totally blinded from our own self-interest. after keeping them in a prison, chained for so many years, and killing their children, Krishna was born at midnight. We know the story. And he informed Vasudev to exchange him with the daughter of Yashoda. Vasudev brought back Yogamaya. She was in the form of a very tiny newborn infant baby girl. By her own potency, in order to enact this Leela for Krishna, she put everyone to sleep, opened all the doors, released all the shackles. And then, at the opportune moment, she cried, just like a baby. And with that cry, everybody woke up. And the guards immediately went to Kamsa, and Kamsa ran down, took the baby by the legs. Devaki was embracing that little girl, begging, crying, pleading, "You've already killed all my children. This is a daughter. You have nothing to fear. Allow me to at least be a mother for this child. Please, I beg you." He was so merciless. He forcibly yanked her from Devaki's hand and went to smash her against the rock. But that little baby rose into the sky and manifested the form of Durga, riding on a lion. Kamsa, you are a fool. The child that is meant to kill you has already been born and is somewhere else. Why do you harass your brother and sister? And she went away. Kamsa realized he's not the controller. This was a rude awakening for him. And suddenly, under the circumstances, excuse me, a little bit of that illusion was lifted from him. And he actually understood what he had done to his sister. And ultimately, he did it all for nothing. Because he did it all. He killed all those little babies and tortured his brother-in-law and sister just to protect himself, ultimately, from the eighth child. And after doing all that, the eighth child was born and was somewhere else. It was all useless. He was humbled a little. And he bowed down to Devaki and Vasudev and begged forgiveness. Kind of. This is how he's begging forgiveness in this particular verse. He's preaching excellent philosophy. What he's saying is Vedic philosophy, the laws of karma. Interestingly, some of the greatest asuras were also the greatest philosophers. From an intellectual perspective, there's a whole chapter in Srimad Bhagavatam practically of Hiranyakashipu speaking super excellent, precise philosophy to his relatives after Hiranyaksha was killed. He was a yogi. He was a philosopher. But unfortunately, he had miserably bad character. And Ravana was also a pundit. He performed tremendous austerities. He was Brahman. He really had philosophy intellectually, but he had miserable character. there was a conversation between His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada and a particular lady who was working on her PhD. I believe she was from Australia. And she was asking Srila Prabhupada questions. She was asking Srila Prabhupada about how it was that Indian gurus were coming to America, and what was the effect on the American and European culture. And Srila Prabhupada asked, "What culture are you talking about?" The cow is your mother, she's giving you milk, and then you kill the cow and drink her milk, and I mean drink her blood and eat her flesh. What is that? What kind of culture is that? And, you know, she said, "Well, you know, we're not of your religion." And Srila Prabhupada said, "In the Bible it says, thou shalt not kill. Why are you killing?" And it went back and forth. And finally, she said, she saw she wasn't really getting what she wanted as far as her thesis. So she said to Srila Prabhupada, "Let us discuss your philosophy." And Srila Prabhupada's words, when I heard this tape, was like a thunderbolt of significant teaching. Srila Prabhupada said, "Philosophy without good character has little or no meaning." So here we have Kamsa. He's preaching excellent philosophy. So first we'll discuss briefly the philosophy he's saying. And then we'll discuss the character of the philosopher that's saying it. And then, if we have time, we'll discuss the reality of what's actually happening here. So the philosophy is that there are laws of nature. Just like the law of gravity. What goes up must come down. It doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. I can proudly write hundreds of books based on lifetime of scientific research to prove the thesis that what goes up does not come down. But even after all these books, this is what happens. It simply doesn't matter what I believe. Laws are laws. The law of gravity is a law of nature. And there are more subtle laws of nature called karma. That for every action, there's an equal corresponding reaction. In the Bible, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. What goes around comes around. This is a law. It doesn't matter what we believe. Srila Prabhupada said, whether you believe fire burns or not, when you put your hand in fire, it will burn. Whether you understand it or not. Whether the chief fire marshal puts his hand in fire or a newborn baby puts his hand in fire, it's going to have the same effect. Because that's the law of nature. The lower species of life are living out their karma. They do not produce karma. Because they do not have the development of free will. But the human being has been blessed with free will. Oftentimes the soul must evolve through 8,400,000 species to reach the human birth, which is the crescendo of creation, because we are given this free will to choose. But with that free will comes an enormous responsibility. We are answerable to our every action and our every word. You can't get away with anything. The laws of the state, if you're clever enough, or you have enough money, or you know the right people, you can get away with crimes. But the laws of nature, there's no escape. Paramatma, the Lord within the heart, sees every action, hears every word. And the devatas, who are responsible for how this material creation is existing, they have their network where they know everything. And Maya Devi herself is all powerful. She's the expansion of Krishna. Therefore, we cannot get away with anything. Both our spiritual advancement as well as our material karmic situation is dependent upon what Krishna sees. Not what people with mortal eyes see. It's scary and it's wonderful. Scary for Kamsa because he was addicted to so many sinful acts. Why didn't he apply this philosophy to himself? That we'll get to in a few minutes. But the laws of karma are for everyone who is conditioned within this material existence. Srila Prabhupada told our Peter Burwash, in every lecture he gives to devotees, he always repeats this as foundational to what he says, where he actually gave a donation, and then the person he gave the donation to ran away with all the money and didn't use it for its purpose. And he complained to Prabhupada in a nice way. And Prabhupada said, "Do not blame the instrument of your own karma." This is the way a devotee sees things. Tatenu kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatmikritam vipagam. That whatever comes upon us, instead of blaming other people, we understand this is my destiny. Due to what I have done in the past, this is just coming back to me. And this consciousness frees us from making excuses to perpetuate and aggravate our karmic situation. Because, you see, whatever may come to us now is due to our past. We really don't have much choice what's going to happen to us. But we do have a choice how we're going to respond to it. We could respond by blaming something or someone for what's happening and retaliate, and then just aggravate and perpetuate the cycle of karma we're in and make things worse? Or we could behave in a compassionate and a proper way, and then out of that bad karma, it's erased because we've gone through it and we've sowed good karma for the future. Or we could surrender to Krishna. Tatenu kampam susumikshibano punjana evatmakritam vibhagam. This verse that Brahma speaks here in Srimad Bhagavatam. That when suffering comes upon a devotee with folded hands and a grateful heart offers obeisances to Krishna. I know whatever's happening is only a small token of what I deserve. In this state, let me pass through it with tolerance and surrender to you, my Lord. And one who does that, the supreme liberation is that person's rightful claim. Because Krishna is so pleased. So Kamsa is speaking from a philosophical point of view very precisely. Srila Prabhupada in the purport is agreeing with everything Kamsa says. Yes, by the power of providence, we are responsible for our own acts. And therefore, these children who died from Kamsa, Kamsa was the instrument. He was the agent. And Devaki and Vasudev, he was the agent to make them suffer by seeing their children die. So Kamsa is saying, don't be mad at me. Don't lament. It's my fault. But on a higher level, it's not really my fault. It's their fault. Now we'll speak on the subject of Srila Prabhupada saying that philosophy has little or no meaning without good character. Because that is the purpose of philosophy, is to transform one's life. Otherwise, philosophy could be one of the most dangerous things on the face of the earth. If it is being understood and propagated by people with low character. Because according to the laws of karma, even if it is the karma of someone to suffer, if you're the one that makes them suffer, you have to accept all the karma of making that person suffer. I remember when I was a new devotee, somebody asked a senior leader of our society, is it that all this cow slaughter in the West, is it the karma of these cows to be slaughtered? And if it is, what's the use of protecting cows? Because they're going to die anyway. And I remember that devotee, he quoted Srila Prabhupada. He said, what the karma of these living entities are may be something that you don't understand. But one thing you can understand, if you have any participation on any level of the killing of that cow, you are fully responsible with all the karma to suffer. The living entity in the cow's body, you may not understand fully, but this you can understand completely. You are responsible. Whether a person deserves to suffer or not, if you're the one inflicting on it, you may be an instrument in one sense, but you have the choice whether you're going to be that instrument. And if you do, then there's going to be instruments coming after you. Because you have full responsibility. And this is, in many ways, what turns people away from religion or spiritual life. Hypocrisy. Kali Yuga is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Hiranyakashipu was Satya Yuga. Kamsa was Dwapara Yuga. Ravana was Treta Yuga. They were all philosophers. And probably better intellectual philosophers than anyone today. Kamsa had all those heads. And they were all filled with philosophy. Now it's the age of Kali, which is actually the age of hypocrisy. So many people in the West were brought up in homes with religions, but they just saw so much hypocrisy. And they saw so much complacency in actually applying the teachings of their religion in daily life. And when they met Srila Prabhupada, they saw something extraordinary. Here was an acharya who was living by these highest principles of philosophy. Who was actually had the character of true love for God, which was manifested as compassion and self-control and humility and fearlessness. And he was very specifically teaching people how to live with the character of philosophy. There was a lifestyle. And therefore people who rejected their own religions found a person who was giving the essence of all religions and they accepted it and their lives were transformed. It's most important. Srila Prabhupada was once asked by an interviewer, how will we know who is your follower? And Srila Prabhupada, he answered in different ways, but in a particular time he said, because you will see that they are perfect ladies and gentlemen. The word of a great devotee, the name of a great devotee is Narottam, which means the ultimate perfect human being. Srimad Bhagavatam explains that from the mode of goodness, one can transcend to the spiritual state of life. Srila Prabhupada tells that there are 18 Puranas, 6 for those in the mode of ignorance to raise them to the mode of passion, 6 for those in the mode of passion to raise them to the mode of goodness, and 6 in the mode of goodness to raise them to the transcendental plane. So our philosophical understandings and even our sadhana is like the airplane to take us to Vaikuntha. The mode of goodness is like the runway to get that airplane off the ground. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meeting in and of themselves are not transcendental. They're simply in the mode of goodness. Because there are atheists who don't eat meat, who don't have illicit sex, who don't take intoxication, and who don't gamble. So by following those four regulative principles, it's not that they're making great spiritual advancement. They're living to some extent in the mode of goodness. But when we live by those four principles and we're stable on that goodness form, then when we chant the holy names of Krishna and render devotional service and hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we just take off to the spiritual world. We have seen on so many occasions when people mistreat others and then philosophically rationalize it to the others, to themselves, and to the world that they didn't do anything wrong. It's all karma. To misuse good philosophy with bad character is not only immensely destructive to our own spiritual lives, but it's one of the greatest challenges to the faith of a society. It's natural that people simply don't even believe in the philosophy when they see it doesn't change a person's character. Srila Prabhupada writes that the purpose of all of his temples was to bring people to the blessing of associating with devotees. It means to see that we live by our philosophy. Then people not only believe and have faith in the philosophy, but they're induced to practice it because they see its result. In the early days of my spiritual life within ISKCON, I lived at New Vrindavan. And it was very interesting. Because when I was there, Srila Prabhupada came 3 times. And I came to practically every one of his classes and every one of his darshans and his conversations. Sometimes he was there for 2 weeks. And interestingly, although in the city temples, mainly Srila Prabhupada was putting tremendous emphasis on the publication and distribution of his books. We have seen so many letters. We've heard so many tapes. We've seen so many quotes. Srila Prabhupada told us that he personally put his own spiritual ecstasies in his purports. While everyone else was sleeping, he would be up for hours. 3-4 hours every night, translating and giving the world his purports. He put so much of his life into those books. And he was speaking to you and me and to everyone. And I remember when I was in New York in 1972, after coming from India, Srila Prabhupada was emphasizing to those devotees how important it was to distribute his books. But then he said, but they are not only to be distributed, they are to be read. I remember exactly, because I remember where I was standing, right on the side of Radha Govinda Dev at the Henry Street Temple, when Prabhupada was on his Vyasa side across. And Prabhupada said, it is not that the book distributor should give a book to someone and ask them to buy it. And then they say, do you read these books? And he said, no, I only sell them. He said, who will want to buy? We must read the books and we must distribute the books. And what does it mean to read the books? Srila Prabhupada wasn't talking about reading the books as a scholarly exercise. When Prabhupada talks about reading the books, he's talking about actually being nourished by them, following what they say, transforming our life and our character. So when Srila Prabhupada came to New Vrindavan, to be honest with you, I just don't remember where he ever talked about book distribution to us.